Hello everyone, welcome to LTV Talks. Today we have Thierry with us. Thierry is the CEO at Massive Rocket. Massive Rocket is a data and CRM consulting company based in London, and they help companies use data to understand their customers, automate communications across various CRM channels, and the idea is to generate predictable growth. He's also an advisor to actionable.me, and which is a standardized and automated approach to running CRM programs. So it's a service that sort of latches on to tools like Braze and helps you to do more systematic CRM and more foundational stuff in an automated way. So they provide tools and processes designed to get the customers to value quickly, consistently, and predictably. So Thierry, with that, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much for having me, Karan, and you should probably work at Massive Rocket. That was awesome.
I can do the sales pitch.
Yeah, that was a great introduction.
Okay, perfect. I was curious to have you on the show, and I think it's mostly because of course, you're doing some incredible work. We had a shared client at Deezer, so I had some glimpses of what you do and how you work. But also, you've been creating a lot of buzz in the industry, and you have a very unusual background. So just like maybe give us a glimpse into what you started as and how you came about creating something like Massive Rocket.
No, thanks, Karan. Massive Rockets, we call ourselves a data and CRM consultancy. We're basically a Braze agency. We're a team of about 65, 70 people. We've been around for about 5 years now. We're going to celebrate our 5-year anniversary. And we serve customers in the US, Europe, and APAC regions. About half our revenue is in the US, about the other half is in Europe, and then we're just starting to serve more and more customers in APAC to be able to do 360 customer support for the businesses we serve. We do a lot of work in media, gaming, entertainment. We do a lot of work in travel and hospitality. We do a lot of work in finance and fintech. I think the companies we serve tend to be businesses between 500 and 3,000 people, either fast-growing startups who've passed product market fit, or traditional businesses who are transforming. Really, in short, I'm a software engineer. So I did a bachelor in computer science in Belgium, and I've always liked just kind of building products that people use. It's obviously a hard thing to do. And so I started doing computer science. I used to build, little prototypes of things, and then, social networks and stuff like that. And I used to get people to join it, interact, become friends, that kind of thing. But I found that they always stopped using it after some time. And so after doing some research, I thought, okay, maybe it's because the product's not usable. And so I went back to uni and studied user interface design and UX. And so then I would make usable products, but still people, I wouldn't be able to go and scale the growth of those. And that's when a few years later, I came into this notion of growth hacking, product led growth. And so that's when I started looking into, I think a new type of marketing that integrates deeply into product and allows you to scale businesses without necessarily needing to build new features. And that comes from understanding customers through data, understanding what are the kind of behaviors that they're having, what are the behaviors you want them to have, and then how do you run campaigns to go and actually get them to do those things. After a long time, that ended up turning into Massive Rocket kind of by mistake. That's really where it came from initially.
Wow. And what kind of products were you building when you were starting out? What were these apps and, or was it more SaaS tools?
Yeah, I'd say I'd probably start by saying it was never very, very good. But I was this was when I was 21 or something, and I got very excited. Basically, I learned web development, and then I learned how to build a login page. And then I used to get users to log into my thing. I found that once you put a login on a website, your utilization or the retention rate goes through the roof, actually. And I thought that was pretty funny. So I decided to start doing things for people to do once they logged in. And so I started making games, getting ways of getting random people to get to know each other. It just went on and on for years, actually. And I got a community of a few thousand people that were engaging, doing stuff. But then obviously Facebook came out and killed my idea. So that was the end of that. Theirs was way better, for sure.
I see. And when did you actually create Massive Rocket? Because it was 5 years ago, right?
Right. So Massive Rocket's just turning 5 years old now in August. I was really excited about it. Actually, what happened is the latest product I was trying to build was kind of like a small Braze for B2B. So I was building a marketing automation email platform for like small businesses to be able to sell their services. And we did that for a couple of years with a few friends. We bootstrapped it, got a few thousand users on it. The product ended up being pretty good after some time, but we never made a very good business. And so to fund the product, and I went out to raise funding, and I absolutely hated the whole process. Like, it was just not fun. Like, you know, I had to go and, I don't know, anyone who's raised funding kind of knows, like, the story is like, it's not hard. It's not easy. It's like not super, super fun. And like, once you've figured out how to do it, it's okay. But it's like, generally speaking, I didn't like the whole idea behind it. And so I ended up just doing more work to fund the project myself. And so I was doing a bunch of consulting, and after some time, that ended up becoming Massive Rocket.
Wow. Yeah. And when you started it, what type of consulting were you doing? Because 5 years ago, like, I imagine CRM looked quite different to what it does look like today, right? And also maybe the role of data has changed over the last 5 years as well.
This is correct, Arun. Like, actually, each time I forget to put it back in context. But when I first started, this was almost 10 years ago now. I was trying to do mobile campaigns for McDonald's in like Sweden and Japan. And so like they had Adobe and they had like no great way of sending push messages. And so we were like, this was this crazy thing where we were having to build a bunch of custom stuff to send like push messages. And we were having to plan push messages 6 months ahead. And so, and you know, McDonald's is an awesome like business, like, you know, anything you do with burgers, people are going to engage. So every campaign had like crazy engagements, but we had to plan them 6 months ahead. Then everyone would click on the push and would kind of kill their app. And so it was just like slow and painful and messy and kind of not super smart. And we were sending the same message to the whole planet at the same time. It didn't really matter who you were, or what you cared about. And then I found about a year of that, I found a company, a mobile messaging company. It was called Swerve at the time. It got bought by a company called MessageGear now. Basically, my boss at the time, Alex, a really like super cool like a sales engineer, was kind of just demoed it to me during the interview, and it was kind of like, holy crap, you can just go and start sending push like immediately. And I think now it's kind of a given, like no one's like super impressed with that anymore. But for me at the time, I was like, I've been trying to do this for like a year, and this guy's just showing it to me. So I joined, like I did everything I could to join that company, and I stayed there for about 4 years. And we pitched to like I used to sell to airlines, telcos, and banks. It was like a lot of fun actually. But the sales cycle on that was like 12 to 18 months. And then people used to like buy it and then just really do nothing with it. Like it was driving me crazy. And so they bought the software and the campaigns that ended up going live was the stuff that I was kind of showing them during the sales cycles. And there's almost no one who's actually like super engaged with the software. And to me, it was kind of a strange thing because it's like clear that it makes money. And so it's like, why wouldn't you do it? So I ended up kind of looking for agencies to actually do the stuff that Massive Rocket does today. Basically I found like two types of agencies. There were like system integrators who were really good at the tech stuff. And then there were like kind of marketing agencies who could do the campaigns and almost nothing in the middle. So the marketing guys didn't want to bother about the tech. The tech guys couldn't care less about the campaigns. And then there were companies who were doing that, but there was kind of like Accenture, Capgemini, Cognizant, like these kind of like super large guys who kind of did Adobe, Salesforce, Oracle, but didn't care about the whole next generation of technologies that was coming built around mobile. So to be honest, I never really wanted to like make an agency or anything. I was just, okay, let me just go and freelance a little bit, make some money doing that, and I'll use that money to go and pay for my product. But as I started doing that, like more and more people starting to asking me, like I thought the problem was it's hard to add an SDK into an app. So I was just doing SDK integrations. I used to take an app, put an SDK in there, and then like allow people to go and do campaigns. We did like a few of these, and it was kind of like any software. We used to just go and install it for people. But then obviously like, and I think like it's quite recognized now, it's like Braze was kind of like, back then Braze was like 5 year ahead, and I don't like of anything else in the market. And I think still now, my personal opinion, it's still the case. Like, it's very, very hard to go and compete with something like Braze that's been built for like years and years to serve like very specific use cases. So we ended up like pivoting to focus only on Braze implementations, after about a year, and like the rest is like I'll maybe go into where we are now, but that's kind of where like the the premise of the company came from. Yeah.
That's fascinating, because I remember it was about like 4 years ago, and my light bulb moment, although might not have been that strong because I haven't been building push notifications for a year and then just finding a solution which does it way more cleanly. But yeah. I remember my encounter with Braze was, we were using this tool at the time, which was, you know, and we were quite big on promotions, right? And it took us like a month of planning and a month of execution, making sure everything was set up correctly, and QA and whatever it takes, to make sure that the campaigns were going out correctly to the right people and the way we wanted it to be. And yeah. I remember like someone showed it to me on Braze, and they did the exact project in like 5 hours completely.
Yeah.
And that I remember very clearly that was the moment for me where I thought, okay, if I am in this field, it has to be with, you know, working with these kind of technologies and not, you know, the old fashioned ones, because this definitely is going to be the way to work. I mean,
yeah, I'd absolutely agree. And I think one thing I'd say is, again, I'm super biased on Braze. So everything I say, I think you have to take with a pinch of salt. But I in my last company, I was a sales engineer. So I had to go and sell the software, and I was selling the stuff competing with Braze. And I used to like lose all the time. And like, it used to drive me crazy, because like, I normally have a pretty high win rate on projects like these. But against Braze, I just kept on losing again and again and again. And I knew that I would lose going in also, because I understood that they had like, you know, better software at like more affordable price points. But actually, once I got the first demo of Braze, I remember thinking like, okay, like I'm just wasting my time with all this other stuff. Like it was just like so far ahead of anything else that was there. And the thinking was not like, you know, it's easy to build SaaS, but it's very hard to understand end users and what campaign managers are trying to do, how they think, how to design campaigns. And still now, like I see demos of software all the time. Like I've not seen anything else on the market where it's like, you can tell that the people who've built Braze are trying to like use it. And so there's almost nothing where like the actual, like, you know, people who build the software use the software. And you can really tell that with the Braze platform.
Completely agreed. And also, I think they've kept that up, because one of the, you know, things that, of course, you know, I also work with different tools with different clients sometimes. And one of the things that keep coming up is like, you know, what Braze did well, I think, was also like capture the bridge between what is technical and what is marketing, because marketing folks traditionally didn't have like this data background or technical background. And I feel Braze is one of those tools where a marketer can go in and feel how API works, for example, is very clear to someone who works with Braze versus other tools, right? Because how simple they've made the technology and how usable they've made the technology. So
I think what they've done particularly well is really focus on what is the things that are useful to build and what else is a commodity. And I think it's a thing that's really, really hard to do, especially as you grow, you raise a lot of money, you try and start wanting to build everything. The Braze guys have still somehow managed to say, look, we're not going to build an army of services in-house. We're not going to go and build all this other random stuff. We'll just build the thing that doesn't exist and that is super high value to the market. And that seems to be the way they think from the start. Like the way they make product decisions still blows my mind. And they don't, you know, sometimes on the customer side, it's maybe a bit frustrating because they don't say yes to random feature requests. And so there are a bunch of other vendors who'll do like, we'll do the services, we'll do any feature request, we'll go and change the product. Braze is not like that. They stay true to their roadmap. But in my opinion, it means they're building a really good product. Like you can see it like year on year, like the thing just keeps getting better for the right reasons. It's very easy to bet on a company that makes decisions like that consistently. And you've seen it, like Braze, I think, has turned like 10 or 12 or something now.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope this doesn't sound like a Braze pitch.
No, actually, it's like, I guess, like, sorry, like when you go into that, I get very nerdy. But I think it's like Massive Rocket is built on top of Braze predominantly. And so, like, obviously, like, yeah, sorry for like banging on about Braze. But
No. I completely agree.
Yeah.
No, it's, I completely agree how good the tool is. And, you know, it always blows my mind around, like, even today, right? We have like companies who have Braze and who have these really powerful tools, but in some way I feel your insight back then still applies, where a lot of companies don't know how to use it in the most efficient manner, right? Like, is this the gap that you see as well, or is it more like the companies have adopted the tools and they can do the basic stuff, and now you see the fight being at like the, you know, how can you use it better? Or is it still the foundational stuff that they, most companies need help with?
That's a very good question. I think, so the foundation stuff is still a problem. I think generally speaking, the technology is no more, like, it's not been an issue for like the last 5 years. Like even when I was like back, like before Braze, like, I felt for the last like at least 10 years that look, technically this has been solved. Why do I get so much crap in my inbox? Like, it's like, I always wonder about this. And so the technology problem has been solved. It's really around knowing how to deploy the stack, I think, is one thing that confuses a lot of companies. Like, what blocks go where? How do you connect them together? How do you get data flowing through the stack? And it's hard to answer that question because you have to have done a few to know the answer, to be honest. And the answer changes a little bit depending on which kind of business you are, like those kind of things. So I think understanding how to deploy the stack is one part of the mess. The other part is how to configure it properly. So sometimes companies get stuck because they've not just connected it properly. And then the other part is around the process. That's why we built Actionable Me. So at any given point in time, I run about 30 Braze projects or more. And so what we found as we went through and discovered how everyone was using CRM software in different companies, we found that everyone was reinventing the customer engagement process on their own site. So they were reinventing how they make segments, how they design customer journey, how they plan campaigns, how they run campaigns, how they import data. Like, all of these things happen on every single project, it kept on getting reinvented. And so at the end, like, we are like, also, like I mentioned, like, I'm a software engineer, I'm not a very good agency guy. And so we started looking at it thinking, okay, let's just write like scripts and just go and code the stuff for now. And after some time, like, I told the guys, look, just put these scripts in a dashboard so that our CRM team can just go and use it without wasting our engineers' time. And so that ended up becoming Actionable Me. And what Actionable Me does now is it helps us audit a Braze customer very quickly. I think that's the thing that always has to happen is, where am I now? What's going on? What's working? What's not working? Then it helps us. The other problem that we ended up having is, you've done some work for the last month. What is the value you've brought to a customer? And it used to be a very manual, painful effort to go and like report on our campaigns for customers. There's a bunch of different tools. Braze has some functionality, but if the customer is new, then how do you get that up and running super quickly without any dependencies? And so now we've built functionality to report month on month. This is the money we're making for the customer. These are the campaigns we're running. So it allows us to really show the outcomes we're delivering consistently. The third bit is around data import. So all of these projects, the value of Braze or any CRM is only as good as the amount of quality data that you have in the system. We found that for every project, our engineering team has to import again and again, or do data cleanups, or like deduplicate users. So we've written software to go and get those things done also systematically. And then the last few bits are I'm actually quite excited about is we've built functionality to design segments. I found that that's been a thing that's been a pain for a lot of companies. Is segmentation is a weird thing where it's a different word for every company, and everyone thinks about it in a different way. And you can design segments that are either too simple and then it does nothing, no one can use it, or segments that are too complicated and then no one understands how to use them. And so we found a systematic way to go and segment, design segments for Braze projects, and then configure those segments in Braze to go and run and show like value basically to customer. That's been a really exciting thing that we've released. Then the last bit is, it's kind of more of a feature than a core CRM thing, but we found a lot of Braze customers having Salesforce for like the Sales Cloud or the Service Cloud. And so we built this integration between Salesforce and Braze for a customer, I think it was the start of this year. And then we kind of productized that and have been like delivering that as a service also for like the last few months. And that's been kind of a big thing for some of our accounts. It was a really long answer to your question, but I think like the process part I found is a place where like a lot of people get stuck. And so accelerating that has a huge amount of value.
And that's, by the way, no worries about the long answer. I love long answers. And, it's also a very complex topic. So I think like there is also a lot of simplification that often happens with the work that we do, where folks want a direct answer in terms of like, what should we do? And oftentimes the answer is not as simple as saying, these are the four segments you need. This is exactly how it should work.
Yeah.
And process is everything, like how you get to that answer and how you actually identify what you need to work on. I think that in itself is a great process if you already know how to do that for CRM. What I wanted to do is, like, you know, what you said essentially, right? Like, if we break that into different parts, and maybe we can go a bit deeper into each one of those aspects, right? Like, for example, if I am a brand who is just integrating a CRM tool, right? One issue that I also keep seeing and that you mentioned is data ingestion and just making sure that there is good quality data that is flowing in. And there's also, you know, I can trust the data that's coming in to the highest degree. What kind of issues, like, do you feel there is a tech stack or there's a particular tech stack that a company should opt for and, you know, get third-party providers? Or yeah. Is it something where a CRM tool on itself can stand alone, but it's just about coordinating with the engineering team in a better way? You know, what is it more an organizational issue or is it more a technical issue from an integration perspective?
This is one of those really long answer questions. but I think, like, the just taking a step back, you know, like, even to your last question, what I would say is that the thing that's changed is, like, technically this has been solved. So now the question is, how do I start generating revenue and useful outcomes quickly? That's really, like, for me, the name of the game now is speed, is how do you get the stack up and running and do campaigns that are useful and meaningful to end users quickly? That really is, like, the difference between, like, anyone can do Braze. Like, you can go and take some random person, they can go and install it, but how do you get it up and running fast, consistently, and with low risk for the customer, and make sure that you provide good customer experience? That's the place where, I believe, like, the exciting stuff is happening. And so mm-hmm. that starts, in my opinion, with the tech stack, because for sure, we've seen repeat success with certain components, and we've seen repeat failures with certain components. And so we kind of know what works, what doesn't work, what's going to take time, what's going to make money, what's not going to make money. This, I'd say, only experience can tell. And I would also say that every business is different. So all the stuff I'm saying here, I talk about B2C marketing automation. Like, we don't go into B2B. So all of these answers are definitely for high-scale customer-facing automation. And what I have found is, I won't say there's a right or wrong answer, because every business is different and you can solve the problem with a bunch of different technologies. But what I found is, in Massive Rocket stack, the thing that we try and never move on or compromise on is Braze. If there's no Braze, we get, like, okay, we may not even take the project. And most of the times we probably won't take the project if Braze is not there, because we know that Braze is the piece where we'll get it done, we'll get it up and running, we'll make money for the customer. Now, around Braze, there's a question around CDP, ETL, reverse ETL, like, do I need a data warehouse? The second part of the component that we're getting more and more certainty on is having a cloud data warehouse that's a 360 customer view. And there's a whole bunch of debate around this, but we're seeing it. Like, if you got Braze and Snowflake, we get them up and running fast. We start delivering value to the customer fast. And it's something that has very, very low risk, in my opinion. I've said Snowflake here, but, like, the same thing is true with, like, you know, you could do it with, like, AWS, you could do it with Azure, you could do it with Google. But we've seen, you know, get Braze and Snowflake up and running and you start delivering value to customer quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And are there also pieces, for example, I'd be keen to understand how, how you reach or reduce that time to impact for clients? Of course, without giving, like, whatever might be, confidential to your process. But essentially, one thing that I have noticed is, in my experience, focusing on certain segments or certain lifecycle stages always provide, like, the quickest wins, especially if the brand has never done CRM before, right? So, yeah. And the way at least I see these case studies and also, like, you know, best practices, I almost feel there is a split between companies that have no CRM system and are just moving to a new tool. And for them, there are certain things that qualify as quick impact, low effort, and you know you're going to get super extra value out of it very quickly. Whereas then you have, like, this other group of companies who are already doing CRM, like, they maybe move tools, but they are doing and they're utilizing all channels. They're doing some testing, etc. And then there are these companies who are like super advanced, where engineering team is also quite involved into like, you know, creating new data streams, content streams, and you can refresh stuff very quickly. So when you look at those three stages, do you feel like there is impact to be had in all these three stages equally? Or like, how do you assess, for instance, a client who comes in and, you know, how certain you get about the impact you can drive for them? Like, does it vary across how well they're using the tool? Or is it, do you feel you've gone, you know, you've cracked the code for like a lot of different companies at different stages?
It's a really good question. I think we do serve companies at all three of those stages, for sure. 0 to 1 is the easiest. For us, like we, you know, like if you're doing digital transformation, you didn't have a CRM before, we had an old CRM, you know, migrate from Salesforce to Braze, like we know we can make like a crazy impact super quickly. When you go from we got like, you know, you're talking about Deezer customers who've been on Braze for like multiple years, and like, you know, getting them to do more advanced stuff. That depends on the type of project we do. So there are projects where you're just like, you know, optimizing certain lifecycle stages. That has like limited impact depending on like the size of the database. So if the database is massive, then that actually is pretty significant. But again, it depends what kind of optimizations you're doing. And then the leaps depend on like which stage of the lifecycle you're working at. But there is a lot to be like, there's a lot to these CRM programs, right? Like I think you know it also. It's like, if you think simply about like, you know, are you doing segmentation properly? Are you doing, you know, more than just one channel? Are you doing automation versus manual? And then are you going deeper into like the different kind of channels you can? And then as you adding the personalization layers, just in the stuff that I've said here, right? Like there's almost like, call it like 5% of companies are doing all of that kind of stuff. And then all the others are missing like some of these like core parts. And it's not because it's like they don't have like good people. It's because it takes time, experience, effort, like and like very focused skills to get all of these things up and running quickly. And it's not always useful. Also, not everyone needs to run.
I think it's also dependent on just building on your answer as well, right? Like I feel that 0 to 1 is definitely like, you know, no matter what you do, 99% of the times you see impact. As soon as you start communicating to your users, and it of course makes sense, right? Like because as a consumer, I have showed high intent to, you know, to interact with you, and then only if you start interacting with me, suddenly you are going to see that relationship grow. It's almost like a friendship, right? Like if you make a friend and if you stop talking, I'm sure you don't get any value out of it, but over a period of time you need to like sort of keep talking to them. The idea is not to bug them and be like crazy, like that friend who calls them every day, every morning with good morning, good evening messages, and you know, be that brand. So it's almost like that, right? It's a relationship that you want to maintain, and you want to.
It's actually exactly like that. It's a really good like analogy, because like I was trying to think about some of the more sophisticated, like, you know, higher volume clients that we've had for like a long time, and we do have clients who are running, you know, like 100 campaigns a month for those guys, and when I look at it, I think. Actually, over there, there's a lot of like opportunity that we're unlocking, because simply by like incremental uplift on like multiple little touch points, like it actually becomes really, really big. And as you start automating manual things, as you start like improving the triggers, as you start like figuring out like going deeper on personalization on one-on-one level, like you really start like, you know, I think providing better experiences, and that ends up generating more revenue, like just automatically, which I think is very exciting. It's also, I found, where like the biggest need for software like lies, because it becomes very hard to analyze thousands of campaigns with a human. Like you really need like an automated way of like actually reviewing stuff, optimizing stuff. Like it's just not a thing a human can do.
Yeah, even large teams of humans, right? Like for example, I've seen so many companies where there are CRM teams with more than 10, 15 people. And what happens even then is that you would find these tests, one-off tests that are still live for a year or something, and no one has looked at them. So you know, in those areas, I definitely think machines, or, you know, just having a tool that can actually flag those areas for you is very, very beneficial. I actually had a client for which one, where we built this exact thing, and they wanted a very complex dashboard to answer these questions. And what we suggested was like this, we called it the Monday morning dashboard. And it was essentially just like three things that we wanted to look at. And it just showed them each life cycle stage and how the messaging frequency had changed over each life cycle stage. That's it. And if any of their campaigns that they marked as important, if they stopped sending or if there was a drastic reduction in volume. So, you know, only these two things. So, you know, if there is any damage control to be done, and if not, then you can go ahead with like business as usual. So you don't have, and you can plan your week better, right? So that's why we called it the Monday morning dashboard. But
it's interesting, you know, like the one thing I would say is like, the type of business and the type of way of engaging matters a lot on some of these answers. So I've been answering like very generic, but actually like, so we do a lot, like a ton of work in travel and hospitality, which is like super seasonal. And like the, you know, like you have to think of campaigns, like year long campaigns kind of thing. For both of those industries, actually, like, you know, in holiday seasons, like people going solo people, family people. So it's very like very different types of campaigns. We do a bunch of work in like media, gaming, entertainment, which is just always on nonstop, like high scale, engagements. And over there, the super, super advanced needs for personalization, you know, you're talking about Deezer. It goes really deep on like the one-on-one personalization stuff. Like music in particular, I found you know, if you talk to someone about the same artist, maybe different album, they can get annoyed with you. And so you really have to figure out like what's the useful thing to tell to a person, and what might they actually care about, at which moment they'll care about it also. Because even if you think about like a company like Deezer, you've got the web app, you've got the app, you're on the road, you know, you make your playlists maybe on the web app, and then you go and listen passively on the road. So if you start engaging with people at the wrong time, they start getting annoyed because you're interrupting their listening experience. And so it's those things that you really want to be thoughtful about. And that's really where if you go deep on the actual verticals and the kind of industry use cases, you really start getting more value out of the CRM program. So you've got all the technical stuff, but then you go really deeper on the vertical side of things as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. By the way, for also these music streaming apps, if you think about a Deezer versus a Spotify versus someone like a SoundCloud, it's also the type of relationship that alters, right? For SoundCloud, it's more about discovering new artists. And so it's almost determined, you know, it's bad for you if you start recommending them things that they have liked before, or, you know, whatever, because people are in that relationship because they want to know, you know, they want you to tell them about these new artists. Whereas with a Deezer, I'm expecting you to know me better and then just suggest me recommendations that sort of have a good balance of discovery and nostalgia, I would say, you know. So it's pretty, how the app grows makes a big difference, right? If the app is a content app, and it grows out of content, maybe you need to be way closer to how you stream that data to the user versus an app that drives most of its value from motivation, right? For example, I work a lot with health and fitness and these self-improvement apps. Psychology has a very... But I think the psychology bit, I think it does help, because in those apps, it's not about... It's more about how can you motivate someone either intrinsically or extrinsically, right? And
So these are the things that are honestly why CRM is so interesting, is once you fix the tech and once you fix the process, then you really have to start getting to understand the users and what they care about. And, you know, you're talking about health and fitness. It's the same with education. It's you can't make someone be motivated. You have to understand what level of motivation they have, what commitments they're ready to do, and they have to kind of be their companion on that path kind of thing, and kind of take them through the different stages of learning or building a habit. And I found if you just go and blast everyone with the same campaign, that's just not going to happen, right? So there's a certain element. That's why we call it data in CRM. It's we have to kind of understand what they care about, and capture data with ways that are kind of ethical and compliant, understand what they care about, and then deliver value back at a moment that's useful to kind of push them to the next stage of connecting with products and services. The other thing that I've found is we spend a lot of time before working with customers just making sure we understand if they have a product that's of high value and that people care about, and if they have a real database of real users. And if those two things are true, then you can really go and grow the company. But if one of those two things is not true, potentially we may decline the project because we're not super sure if we can generate return for the customer.
Absolutely. I think that that's 100% the case that I have found as well, especially for apps that also you know, there are a lot of apps who look at CRM now as like this retention fixer, where I still feel like most of the heavy lifting comes from the product, and CRM is almost like this nudging part that can make someone, you know, if they're going away from the curve, they bring it back, but it's not going to be the only thing that keeps bringing them back to an app.
I would agree. Like, it's a very hard thing because sometimes it is the case, but like, if someone is saying, I want to fix retention using CRM, probably something is wrong. Like with the business itself, like probably the product's not got product market fit yet. Because if the product's good, like there's a segment of users that are high retention. If you have that segment, then it's very possible to go and like scale that to the rest of the database using CRM. But if there's no one who cares about the product, like the database will die after some time. There's not a lot you can do with CRM. Yeah.
Completely. And I guess like the other question I had for you was also around, you know, when you, of course, started Massive Rocket until now, we've spoken about how the tech side of it grew and like what are some of the main challenges. But I wonder, like, what you have seen from the last 5 years in terms of like team structures and org structure? Because I know there's a lot of, talk in terms of, and I've seen this personally, like not only CRM sitting in marketing versus product, because of course, I'd love to know what you think, but also in terms of team structures, right? Like it has changed so much. And I have my views on what might be like an ideal structure, but I would love to know how you think about this topic in general.
I actually get asked a lot about this topic. I may need to like sit back and think about it a bit more. I'm actually the wrong person at Massive Rocket to answer that question. Our head of product management and consulting, Rachel, probably can answer that like a lot better, because she goes and builds all the teams for all our customers. But generally speaking, my opinion is that CRM, like head of CRM or however you call that person, should report to the CEO, like depending on the business. And the reason I feel deeply about this is because they're the closest to the customer, and they have the fastest ability to make an impact actually across all teams in the business. And they talk on behalf of the business to customers every day. And so it's something that, you know, if I had a V2C business, I would care deeply about what that team is doing, because, and the business case is super obvious also. So if you've got a database, it's very easy to value that database and show a minor uplift on that and say, look, this is how much money you're going to make. And it's a thing where you can go and throw a whole bunch of one-off campaigns and tire the database, or you can go and build on that and make that investment become massive. And so my personal opinion is, I wish CRM teams reported to the CEO, because I think it's deeply tied to the growth of the business, actually. Like once you've passed product market fit, I also think that CRM has the ability to go and expand businesses into other regions, right? You can go and like take the same offering, go and expand and go really deep into expansion into like new markets, which is again a strategic thing that I think should go into CEO. I see a lot CRM going into marketing, and I'm starting to see it like obviously with the whole product-led growth and like product-led organizations. Like the product teams ended up becoming the rock stars in the organizations. My gut feel like that, and I am a product guy at heart. My feel is that like CRM is like the CRM head of CRMs are going to be like the next kind of rock stars in businesses, because they stitch the different parts of the organization together and they make that experience for the customers. So they have the richest source of customer data. They understand that in real time, and they have the ability to react to that in real time faster than any other team in the company. And so in my experience, my personal opinion is that CRM is a really, really exciting space that I think is going to take more and more importance in businesses moving forward.
In terms of reporting to the CEO, I do feel like whenever I have clients where I work or where the CEO is directly involved with the CRM teams, oftentimes I've seen it go the way where it's all about showing impact in terms of like the business impact, in terms of revenue or whatever it might be, unless the CEO has been a product person who understands that it's also retention is the long game and it kind of needs some foundational things to be set in place before you can, you know, start seeing impact directly on the revenue. Of course, you can blast out promotions and move the needle, but I guess that's, to your point, it's like tiring your audience with like exactly same stuff that... Mm-hmm. The other thing I've also seen is when you're reporting to the CMO, because in the industry, there haven't been a lot of CMOs who have tons of CRM experience. Yeah. Mostly they come with like this heavy acquisition focused mindset. And I've always found that to be very different, and you know, it requires a lot of different convincing skills in terms of impact of or showing impact of CRM. So I'm curious, like, if, how do you think showing impact works in these organizations? You know, have you found a very specific way of showing that this is how long it does take, and this is the, you know, plan and in terms of how we get there, but eventually it's always revenue that you want to show? Or are there other ways that you would advise to companies in terms of like showing impact based on who they're reporting to, in terms of like a CEO or a CMO?
It's a really tough question. I'd start by saying that like we've been fortunate to work with mostly forward-thinking CMOs or the CEOs directly of businesses. And this has been very helpful because like they've been willing to like, you know, like take the risk, invest in the practice. But even throughout our like, you know, discovery cycles, like we very clearly know where the impact's going to come from. And so it's very easy for us to go and show like a business case that like gives an idea of the value that would come from a CRM program. And this is something that we're implementing across all our projects, because it's, I think that the mistake that a lot of companies are doing is that they're not realizing the value of the database that they have that's sitting in these CRM programs. And so they end up, there's nothing wrong with this, but it's like, it's not the thing that you want to hire like any random person and go and like send campaigns, because it's your customers, and it's you have an open door to talk to all of your customers in a super personalized way at scale. It's like that has a super big value in my opinion, especially if you've got a product that's very easy to buy and buy again. It's a really like high value thing that's sitting there. So coming back to your question, like we've got like models to show impact, like very simply, and it's very obvious like what the value is of these programs. Now internally, what I found is within certain companies, and we actually like we work a lot with our customers to go and change this, but like CRM is a discipline that's I'd say not yet properly understood, because it's changing and it's very new. And like there's, you know, there is this cliche of like CRM is like a person who sends a newsletter once a month. And like that's what CRM is. Even CRM is a strange thing, right? Because it's like CRM is like the database in Salesforce where you call up the people. Like that's what the actual thing is. What we are talking about is really like CEM or like customer engagement management or something like that. Or like marketing automation, really. Because of that, I think it takes time. Like the zero to one is sometimes a little bit hard. Once you go to one, then the companies are like, oh crap, there's a lot of money here. Like let's go and do something. But zero to one involves like having a strong business case, like evangelizing the organization, showing results very quickly. Sometimes like the biggest issue is people want to do test and learn, but they don't realize that you have to fail if you're testing and learning. Otherwise you're testing nothing. If none of the experiments fail, then what are you testing? That is a thing that I think that is the hardest thing about marketing, is marketing is not used to failing. Like historically, they generally have to show like a line that goes up. And like the bigger the number, the better. And it doesn't really matter what the number is. And so that transition towards kind of more sustainable marketing, thinking about long-term growth, is something I've seen a few businesses do. And it's, to me, it's refreshing and exciting when I see people like lean into this. Like it's a company called Backmarket in France. Like the head of CRM there is a guy called Steven. He's an absolutely awesome guy. And he really like, I think like spends time like talking through this. It's like if you hammer the database with like just one-off campaigns for no reason, like people are not going to care about that. It's spam. It'll make a bit money in short term, and then you lose the long-term opportunity. And if you really treat that customer base like with respect, like you really can go and have a long-term relationship and long-term growth together.
It's funny you mentioned that, you know, in terms of showing impact, there are often like these short-term wins and these long-term wins, and you need to sort of play the balance game, right? That's what I have found in my experience as well. One question that I had from what you said as well was, you know, when you look at the progression of how CRM is perceived, of course, there's a huge shift between what we knew 5 years ago and now, and then, you know, moving forward, I think there's more and more. Nowadays, it's very normal for me to work with a client where the product team already is on to Braze or is already on it. And it's just about like having an expertise in terms of like working with them to improve and to, you know, to do stuff together. And with that also comes a lot of experimentation mindset, because there is a lot of already like a buy-in from the product team, because they realize, for example, with in-app messages, you could do, you know, you could basically smoke test a lot of the things for the, you know, for what build and things like that. So there's a lot of value. And I think like slowly there are more and more departments who are understanding this value and coming to CRM, be it acquisition, coming for like lookalike audiences and understanding which are the users who retain the highest, so that they can feed this data into acquisition or the product team for, you know, for new product launches or things like that. And of course, like the age old promotions and, you know, subscriber retention. I think pricing is a big topic as well for subscription apps, at least, where historically there has been no owner for pricing optimization. And discounting is the tool that has been used so far, and that is kind of owned by CRM. So there definitely is, you know, that aspect coming into play as well, where people are, whoever want to test pricing, start off as a CRM function, because that's the route they have right now, which is easily available, which is just do promotions and, you know, find a hack to see what pricing works for their users. One question for you, Thierry, is how do you see this space evolve, you know, and maybe give us a view on what have you, you know, what strikes you as are the things that have evolved so far that you're surprised by in the last 5 years or even more? And what are the things that you see coming up that, you know, interest you or that you think are going to be super challenging or interesting for, you know?
It's something that I was betting on kind of at like 2 years ago, but about like two years ago, one of my really old friends, a guy called Mitra, reached out to me, and Mitra had been doing data and analytics for the last like 20 years. So I've been doing data and CRM for the last 20 years. He's been doing data and analytics. He's been taking customers, moving them to the cloud, and doing a transformation of on-premise databases to the cloud, and then helping drive modern analytics from that. And he was managing a team of like 150 people doing Snowflake work in his previous company. And he reached out to me saying, hey, like, it feels like our two things are connected. And after we started chatting for a bit, it's funny, he reached out to me at a time at which all my pipeline was starting to turn into Braze plus Snowflake, Braze plus AWS, Braze plus Google, Braze plus Azure. And so like when we chatted, I asked him, look, like, hey, do you want to just come at Massive Rocket and go and build your same company underneath Massive Rocket, but only for Braze customers, and help customers move to the cloud, build their modern data pipelines, and then build their modern 360 customer view on something like Snowflake, so we can hook it up to Braze and run campaigns. And so that's one of the things that's been like very different. So like Mitra joined, he's been building our data engineering and APAC team for like the last year. So he's been at the company for about a year now. His team is the fastest growing team at Massive Rocket. The really cool thing is like he's got like a massive network of people who are just like pure data engineers, data scientists who do AI, ML, who are able to like very quickly take customer data, put it in a single place, clean it up, and then shoot it into our Braze project so that we can go and plan and run campaigns with that. And that's been like one of the most exciting things that I've seen recently, because we like the impact, you know, I was telling you, I get excited about speed. I was telling a friend, like, it's like, I didn't call it Massive Rocket to go slowly. And I think that that's the main idea, is like, I'm very excited about like going even faster on these projects by like fixing the data piece, like very, very quickly. And that's what Mitra and his team are able to do now. Alongside Mitra, so we've had a CDP team at Massive Rocket almost from the start. And the CDP team has been like pulled in different directions because the market's been going all over the place for that. Like, I think you're probably hearing like, you know, like there's like the CDP, there's a new thing that they're calling ETL, data activation, there's reverse ETL, blah, blah, blah. There's all sort of billion different tools that take data in and out of different systems. And that debate is going on, but in the end, the clients are buying everything. And so like the CDP team is like kind of like stitching together all the client systems. The bits that are not moving are Braze and the data warehousing bit. Doesn't matter what the CDP or like integration layer is, like the data warehousing bit is there and growing in complexity. And so like that's one of the biggest things that I'm excited about, because that's reached the point at which it's, I think generally the market's understood that they need it. Like we've gotten really good at doing it. And so the two things have connected really well at the right time. And so it's a really exciting thing for me. A lot of noise around like the ChatGPT and all this other stuff, which I think is, is great. It's going to transform like a lot of different things. It's definitely something that like, you know, like content teams and are going to have to think about. But when I think about like, you know, like call it like whatever, 85% of companies out there, they're still working about going like they're working on going from manual to automated. They're not, they don't forget about intelligence. And so like making sure that those guys are like, that, you know, ready for the future, that are like actually like reducing the amount of like manual stuff, upskilling their team so that they can start going like faster, start thinking about automation. And then that gives frees up the time to go and start doing the intelligent stuff. That's the problem I'm really focused on. And that problem is big. It's really not that like that easy to solve. And you know, like it came back to like years ago, everyone got excited about big data and like all of this kind of like AI ML stuff. And like the data science is still a small portion of the actual data engineering work that happens. Like you have to take the data, clean up the data, store it in ways that are usable. And then that whole practice is like, is a lot of heavy lifting, which is where like a bulk of the work needs to happen for all the fancy stuff to happen on top of it. I think, you know, to answer your question, and it's also not to talk bad, but because this new like, you know, ChatGPT and stuff, it's there, it's real. And there's no doubt that like most of the stuff that humans can do, machines going to do better very soon. To me, there's like no doubt in my mind. I actually sat and thought like really deeply about like, okay, what's the point of what we're doing? And, you know, the Massive Rocket's mission is to make businesses more human. And it sounds like, I took that because I was thinking like, we get all these communications that like don't even care about us. And so I was thinking, how do you make companies talk to people like they're humans rather than like just blast people with the same stuff? And after a few years, we learned how to do that. And that started losing meaning to me like in the last year. But I think now more than ever, that mission remains the same. It's actually like we want to make businesses more human. And that starts by understanding what is a good human? What is the place of the human in the future? What are the skills of the humans in the future? What should be done by human? What should be done by machine? And to me, like actually this whole AI stuff or whatever you want to call it, this new movement, the shift is as exciting as when internet or computer was invented. And, you know, I always look at those old videos thinking, oh man, I wish I was there when internet was invented and I could have like, you know, started companies like PayPal and those stuff. And actually we are at that point. It's like, it's actually one of the most exciting times to have a company because the way people work is going to change. And definitely, you know, if you think about people doing stuff heavily manually, right now you spend like maybe 1 hour a day thinking and then 7 hours a day actually doing like manual stuff. And really what you want to do is like replace those 7 hours with a robot, spend 1 hour a day briefing the robot and then reviewing the work and then 7 hours a day thinking. And if you can like, if you can become that company, that has a lot of value in my opinion, at least for the short term, who knows how fast the robots are going to get. And it's, To be honest, I think a lot, and I think it's scary for a lot of people, right? Because there's entire, like, you know, some businesses have armies of content teams that are sitting there being completely disrupted, right? Like if you've got 20 years of writing content, you used to manage a team of content writers, you spend your whole life studying how to write content properly, ChatGPT has given that away for free to the whole planet. And that's really kind of not fair and scary. You really like that. That's what I think I want to do is help those teams evolve and figure out how to compete, how to go adopt the robot and be the person with the robot versus the person without the robot. And it's the same with computer, right? Like when the computers came out, like they were the people with the pen and paper and people with the computers, and the guys with the computers beat the ones with pen and paper. It's the exact same leap. Like it's just we have to learn how to work with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also bringing it down to the ground, right? Like if you have all these retention and CRM initiatives, a lot of these times, you know, for instance, it reduces so much overload on the engineering team, right? Like when you want a piece of HTML or, you know, a small piece of code for your in-app model or for your email editor or whatever that is, if you have the basic knowledge, you could technically work around and, you know, ask ChatGPT to answer most of the questions that maybe engineering team would have hated to do it anyway, and they as well.
I agree. I think it's going to open up a lot of, like, I think jobs, opportunities, it's going to open up a lot of things in the market, actually, if you embrace it in the right way.
Yeah. But the fact remains, right? Like 80% of the companies are still at a stage where this is like, this is a far concept. It helps them to create foundational systems. But it's still like they are at the stage where you said correctly, like they're just moving from doing these things manually to more automated. And this AI is like almost like the you know, top 5% of the companies who are already there, who are going to be able
but
to
use it. I think what it is transforming is the ability to like visualize very quickly what you could actually do. Because I think before it was very hard to understand what actually AI could do. People were like, haha, it's a joke, what you're going to do. But I think now you can, okay, look, talk to the robot, you'll see. And like people start coming up with use cases, ideas, and that really, it's useful because then the business users have proper use cases, proper ideas, and then you can go and like, you know, implement technology to support those things.
You know, any last minute thoughts that you want to add before we end the call?
Just the one thing I would say is that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's maybe like a little bit scary, like with the whole AI ChatGPT stuff. But I think generally speaking, like the data and CRM space, like in my opinion, has never been more exciting. There's like the technology piece has been fixed. And now you can just go bolt on the right stack to a customer and really go and generate revenue for them. And I think that's something that's really exciting because it gives the opportunities for businesses to grow with very small capital investment, actually. And so people with like an exciting idea, a good business plan can really go and change the world with small teams. And so that's one of the things that I think has been like the most exciting to see over the last like 4 or 5 years as we've been doing Massive Rocket. I think if anyone wanted like examples to see kind of customer stories, to see how we've built stacks, how we've like kind of supported accounts, like you can always feel free to reach out to me directly. I'm Thierry at Massive Rocket. Or you can go on our website, massiverocket.com. It's like super easy to reach out to us. We don't sleep, we don't eat, we just sit there and work day and day. No, like I'm not kidding.
I hope you're not tiring.
Yeah, come work at Massive Rocket. You work like hell, like we're not going to pay you properly, you're not going to sleep that much.
And thank you so much, Thierry, for being here. It was super, like it was a pleasure talking to you and for this chat, honestly.
No, same here, Karan. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for having me.